Property investing. How does it actually work? How do you actually go through the process of becoming a property investor? In this episode, perhaps a multi-part episode of Australian Property Talk, we're going to go through the 101 of becoming a property investor and how you actually buy a property. The steps you need to take to go from not owning any properties to owning an investment property or even perhaps purchasing your first home. We're going to go through the full story as to the steps you need to take and where it begins. Most importantly, I summarize property investing into a few very simple steps. One, getting money. You need bank money, well, most of us need bank money to actually go and purchase an investment property. Step two, place that money. You've got to go buy something. You've got to go buy a property. That's where most of the attention and focus is, and it's a big part of property investing. And the third part is managing your risk through that process. The key aim of property investing and where most people go wrong is they seek perfection. Realistically, most of the results that property investors go and obtain is from taking action, not perfection. Realistically, most of us will not buy the perfect investment property, and that doesn't matter. You simply need to come up with a plan and take action to get the majority of the benefits from being a property investor. Curtis, excited to run through this one. It's a audience request that we're answering here. How are you?
Yeah, good. And it's good to do, like, I feel like this one's a bit more practically useful for our listeners as well. Yep. Often we talk about some theoretical economic discussions that drag on, but I like this one because it's actually, you know, what steps can you take, how to think about property investing and practically, like, what you can do to put yourself in the best position.
I'm going to get straight into it. So this is one of my gripes with the industry is there's so much out there. It's really, really hard to work out what you actually need to do and where to go. There's so much information. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of professions in the process as well. Some important, some you do need, some you don't need. Now, we're going to run through that process. And my key aim here is to simplify and make it efficient cost-wise for our audience. So if you listen to this and take action with these very simple steps that we uncover through these episodes and nuggets of wisdom that you can go and pay other people to go and get for you, I'm trying to simplify that by delivering all the messages and key points that I've learned from property investing for over a decade now and speaking to PIAs agents, property experts, property investment coaches, all of that shared to you to help you actually take action. That's the real aim of this series. So let's start with the basics. What is the first step to property investing? In my mind, it is about working out what you can actually do and how much money you can actually get, what you can afford, because there's no point property investing if you can't afford it, or even going down the path of step 3, 4, 5 if you simply can't do it because your finances don't allow it. Do you agree?
Yeah, step one? Exactly. Step one, like you simplified it so nicely, get money.
Yes.
You have to, in order to purchase property, like, you know, particularly in Sydney or, you know, in a lot of Australia now, you're going to have to get some bank funds or some funds that aren't your own cash savings in order to make this whole little investing operation work.
Pretty much.
You can think of yourself like a startup business, like you need to go get some capital that's not your own.
Pretty much, yeah. So that's where a mortgage broker or banker comes into it. Basically, you need money from somewhere. That usually comes from banks for residential property. It does come from banks or non-banks for the overwhelming majority of people. So you need to speak to a bank or simplify it for yourself. Speak to a broker. Speak to Curtis. That would make it easy. But speak to a broker to go and work out what your funding options are. Perhaps a slightly before that step is before you go invest in property or buy a property, you probably want to be in a position where you comfortable financially, or you can actually meet your expenses. You know, so your day-to-day expenses can be met through your income. You'll probably want to be in a job. That's probably step one, be in a job or have some sort of income. That is a position that you want to be in to actually make speaking to a broker or a banker productive. There's no point if you're earning, you know, next to no money and can't fund your living expenses and living off debt. So you want to be in a position where you feel broadly comfortable, you can meet your expenses, and you're weighing up a decision. Do I want to rent or buy, or do I want to go buy an investment property? That's step one. And then it's speak to a mortgage broker. Now, if we go and do that, so if I'm a first time want to be investor and I go and speak to a mortgage broker, what questions and what am I going to learn from that process?
Yeah. So the key things, and often how I describe it to people, is basically like when you're running the when we're running the calculations, banks are going to look at your borrowing power, which is effectively a bit of a like a cash flow summary of your financial position. So your current income, your current expenses, and you know your current liabilities, and then essentially work out, okay, based on your current cash flow, how much of a mortgage repayment can you afford? It's actually the mortgage repayment the bank looks at. Yep. And then they reverse engineer that out to work out what the actual mortgage number would be, the debt number would be.
Yes.
So that's one calculation. And then they're also going to look at your deposit position because it's a combination of those two factors that dictate what your maximum purchase is. So I think if you're a first-time investor and you're going to a banker, you're going to a broker, what you're really trying to work out is what do my maximums look like with, and do these maximums differ between lenders? Because ideally, I think what you want to do is you want to work out what the maximum is, not necessarily so you can use it all if you don't want to, but you can work backwards from there. And that can help set some objectives and give you a bit of an idea of what purchase price range you're looking at. All these other investment decisions that you're going to have to make are going to be a little bit guided by the answers you get from that and those initial calculations. Like, for example, you know, if you want to buy a $6 million like low yielding like investment property in Sydney, like that, the numbers might not be there for that, for example. So you might be able to cross that off the list of potential investment strategies and move on to things that fit within your world of possibilities.
Yeah, cool. That sounds pretty useful. So let's step back a little bit. I'm going to just pretend I am past uni. I've been out of uni for a couple of years. I'm single. I'm still living at home or, you know, share housing somewhere. Make $100,000 a year.
Yep.
I'm picking up the phone and I say, ring, ring. Hey, Curtis. How are you? My name's Jacob. I want to go. I don't know where that came from. My name's Jacob. I want to go buy an investment property. I have saved $50,000. Can you help me? Imagine that's broadly the starting point of how that works. Is that
pretty much? Yeah.
Cool. Okay. And then you or a mortgage broker or a banker will then go and collect my finances, work out that I own $100,000, a share house, this is my situation, and then come back to me and say, hey, look, you can go buy your own home for, you know, say $500,000.
Yep.
Or you can go buy an investment property and stay living in your own home for $700,000. So you get a couple of numbers there, which then tells you that I can go and get money. Yay.
Like, exactly. So
this Jacob person here can go and get some money to go become a property investor. Importantly, am I right in saying this? After this discussion, I will know whether that choice actually exists for me. Is that right? Like whether I can actually do it.
Enter the market or not. Exactly. So that's like obviously the first threshold you have to jump through is like, all right, do any of these possibilities work for me in terms of what I would want to buy? If my borrowing power is only 200,000, it means like I'm looking at a regional town. Like, do I even want to consider that? Like, there might be a hard no decision at some point relatively early on in the process being like the numbers just don't work.
Yep.
And like you say, or if the numbers do work, you can be like, all right, this is possible. So now it's about wading through the different decision trees of ways you can do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So decision trees. So this is where having an expert to or someone with a little bit of experience probably helps there because as Jacob, as someone who has been in this world, I might be working in IT or music and I have very little experience with property and financing. I probably need some explanation to be like, what are the decisions I've got to make? What are all these things that I might need to consider? But realistically, those decision trees are details and next step details that you do want to go through. But really, the key information set that I need from this and that I could get pretty quickly is, can it actually work?
Like, yeah, can I move forward? Is it something I can move forward with at all? Yes, yes, no. That's the first one. If no, then obviously no.
Yep.
But if yes, then all the options will flow out of that. And that's often where people get a little bit caught up in, you know, decision paralysis, basically, because there are a lot of different ways you can, you know, slice the onion, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. So I am now working out after a conversation with you that I can go buy something. So the starting point here is I'm in a position, before I call you, I'm in a position where I can call you because I'm in a job and I feel, hey, look, maybe I should be doing something about my savings.
Yeah, I've got some savings. I've got some maybe surplus cash flow, or my cash flow position is comfortable enough that I feel like I could take on, you know, a mortgage or some debt in order to purchase an asset.
Yep.
You know, like could be, if you're into shares, you might be looking at a margin loan, but like your cash flow position is like, all right, I feel like I can take on a little bit of risk and I have the cash flow because, you know, the debt is a bit of risk. I can take on a little bit of risk and I can absorb that into my life.
Yep.
I'm not, you know.
I'm going to add a little nugget of wisdom here from my own experience and what we see. Time in the market plays a very big role in your total return. That's compound interest, the eighth wonder of the world. Now, that means the quicker you put yourself in a position where you can leverage into a property asset, if you use history's performance as a guide, the greater the overall return will be because it's going to occur over a longer period of time, and time is one of the key ingredients of success for property investing.
Yeah, I think so. And we obviously work with a lot of property investors, and I would just say generally, like as a guide, the ones who I see are the most successful are the ones that when they can do something, they do something.
Yes.
And because there's periods of your life and your circumstances where you can't really do anything. You're not in a position to purchase. Your life circumstances don't allow for it. Maybe the numbers don't work. Could be a myriad of reasons why it's not the right time to do it. But there are also periods where you can do it. And the people that we see who build the most successful portfolios, just as a fundamental principle, if they have the option and it's looking good to take action and do something, they do it.
Absolutely.
And then they might hold for a period. They might go through 3 or 4 years where they're not in a position to do anything further. That's cool.
Yep.
Then it circles back around again. They can do something and they do. And then over 10, 20 years, that's all of a sudden you've got a pretty healthy portfolio.
Yeah. Look, that is an absolute ball of wisdom there. When you can do something, go and do something. That is a really, really core message that we see with really successful property investors over periods of time. They are using their income, their effort, their labor that they go in to go into work and earn income. They're using that income, and when they have the ability to leverage into a property asset, they usually go and do it, and they do it at the soonest, more often than not, and they trust that market conditions broadly will be okay, and time getting in 2017 is better than getting in 2023, for example. Time helps because assets inflate over time and debts deflate over time.
Yeah, and like just as an example, and, you know, market conditions change as well. So there's plenty of people that we've, you know, spoken to over the last 3-4 years, you know, looking at making a purchase, whether it's investment, owner-occupied, while rates were really, really low, thought about it, didn't really do it. And then they come back to us when, you know, after rates have increased from, you know, 2% rates to 6% rates. And I'm like, look, the numbers don't work now. You've gone from being able to do something to not being able to do something. So sorry, you just have to sit tight. You can't do it. And they're like, oh, you know,
what a great message,
can we look, what can I do? It doesn't work anymore. And it's just a function of there are going to be periods where you can't, for one reason or another, then you can't take action. Mm. And like I say, the people who we see that are the most successful are the ones that take advantage of the situations where they can do something.
Yep. I'm going to expand this out a little bit. We're obviously property investors, mortgage brokers, so I don't want to sound too biased here. The take action bit, I would say that could extend to other asset classes as well. We are clearly not experts on that, not on Australian property talk, but taking action and generally moving cash from a cash asset to something more active at different points in time and taking investment decisions is good financial behavior, whether that's in other assets or whatnot. That good financial behavior pays dividends over time. So property is the asset that we talk about and the asset of choice for us because you can leverage and what we know about, but taking action and into investing is part of becoming wealthy over time. And that is a really, really key message there. It's something that I live by as well. Like I remember our first job at Treasury, like how long did it take me to buy my first investment property? Like 6 months. You were on the same boat like 12 months later or something like that.
Yeah.
We both purchased pretty much as soon as we could. I know you bought me lunch that week because I was broke.
I was going to say, you're my little canary in the coal mine. You go buy the investment property first. I'm like, he's still alive. All right, I'll buy one as well.
Yeah, I remember that. That was, it felt, so this is why that's so interesting, because it felt like I was alone. Like when I remember it, being like, people like were like, that guy's nuts. Like,
yeah.
What's he doing? Buying a property. Where was it? In Queensland somewhere?
Yeah.
Or was it in Sydney? I'm not too sure. There were quite a few at that time, but you know, we purchased pretty quickly when we could, and this goes back to the take action when I can. And the steps that I focused then was speak to a broker at the time and work out, who became a mentor of ours actually, but work out exactly what my options were. That is the first step. Work out what you can do. And have that conversation.
Yeah.
And it will open up decision trees for you. It will open up more and more questions. And that is just part of the process of becoming more educated and becoming more and more ready. But speaking to a broker or banker, a good banker, there's plenty of great bankers out there as well. Speak to someone trusted that can help guide you as to what your options are and whether you can actually take options as the first step.
And the reason why we harp on this point a little bit, because it sounds kind of obvious and, you know, it probably just applies to life in general. Like if you want to get an outcome at some point, you got to do something, like just in general. But the reason why we harp on this is because it's often like where we see most people don't actually get past this point. So the numbers work, or they have an idea, they do some preliminary investigations, but they don't, whether it's, you know, with us or with a bank directly at the bank or whoever they're talking with, it doesn't end up in a purchase. They don't end up taking any action. It doesn't go anywhere. So it sounds obvious, but it's a hurdle that a lot of people don't get past.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is the bit that I really, really love about our jobs. Like, we get to be involved in the process of educating someone and helping them work out what options they are and helping them take action, an action that hopefully and has definitely over the past decade has helped people build wealth and move in line with their goals in life. That it's just empowering and enriching to be part of that process. Which interestingly enough isn't talking about loan options and the decision trees specifically, and lender choices and rates and repayments and all the details that we actually do in our day job. It's not so much about that. It's about the bigger picture that we're involved in helping people take action. So let's deep dive a little bit further into what happens next. I call you and then you tell me, this is my budget. I come back to you with some questions being like, these are some questions that I think some people should ask. Be like, so if I go down the pathway of purchasing an investment property, what impacts does that have? What does my position look like after taking that investment property? Can I buy another investment property? Does it impact my ability to buy my own home?
Yeah.
Should I go pay, like, what are my repayments like? And should I consider just paying interest? Are these good questions to ask? Are these part of the process?
They're all good questions to ask, because you want to build a little bit of a picture of your end position in your mind. So, and again, not to make it so overly complicated that you don't end up taking action, but you want to have a bit of an idea of, all right, like if I choose go down the path of making an investment purchase, what's my cash flow on this going to be like? You know, how does that look on principal and interest repayments versus interest only? Like, that's all useful information to help you build a picture of, like, all right, if I fast forward 12 months into the future and I'm now the proud owner of this investment property, like, what is my day-to-day, month-to-month, year-to-year cash flow look like? And some of those choices that you make will impact those numbers. So useful to get a handle on that. And then also, like you say, what that does for your other decisions that you can make after it. Are you in a position where you buy one investment property and you're maxed out in terms of your deposit, your borrowing power, you're just in a position where you're sitting and holding? Or are you in a position where you can then go and make another purchase, or you can purchase a place to live in as well? All those different factors. So you want to be able to have an idea of what the end position is, what it's going to look like after you make the purchase, and if that aligns with what you're trying to do. So, for example, like, a lot of people's goal is to, you know, have their owner-occupier, you know, potentially buying 3 or 4 investment properties using up all your borrowing power isn't the way to get there. So you want to have a bit of an idea of that to go, all right, is this end position that I'm creating for myself, does that actually align with where I'm trying to get to? Because you don't want to misalign that, potentially taking some action and misaligning it slightly might still get you a better result than just doing nothing forever.
Yep.
But if you've got some firm goals about where you want to get to, those choices impact your ability to get there, basically.
Yeah, for sure. So essentially pick up the phone, have a conversation. You know, once you're in a position where you feel broadly comfortable with the deposit size, I'm just going to add a little bit of color to that. If you have if you're in a position where you're fortunate enough where your parents own a property or an investment property and have equity in that, perhaps you can skip that component altogether and have a guarantor that helps you skip the time to go and get a deposit. That's Bank of Mum and Dad. It's, you know, plays a larger and larger role here in Australia with the amount of equity held in the older generations now. So many, many purchases are in that boat where they make their purchase, their first purchase via guarantor. So you can skip that deposit bit if you're in that circumstance. And if you're not in that circumstance, you'll need to save up a little bit, you know, ideally at least 5%. And the more, the better there. But ideally 5% is kind of where you could start having a bit of a conversation. And the purpose of speaking to a broker is you understand what your options are and the strategy, I guess, the framework of if I choose this, this is what it means. If I buy now, then I'm going to be using my deposit and I'm not using all of my borrowing power. Let's say I can borrow for $700,000, but I only have a deposit amount that lets me buy for $350,000. Perhaps I'm buying the wrong property. Maybe I should wait for 3 months and then have the same conversation again.
Yep.
It gives you clarity. That is what you need. You need to go from confusion to clarity, and speaking to a broker, banker will get you from confusion to clarity as to what your options are, what decisions you should make before you go on take the next steps.
Yeah, pretty much.
Agree with me?
Yeah. It's like if there's however many million properties there are in Australia, you just need, there's a line somewhere of what's possible and what's not.
Yes.
So you just need to find out where that line is. Then everything that's not possible, you don't have to worry about because it's not possible. It's not happening.
Yeah.
So then you can just start dealing with the things that are possible.
Brilliant. Fantastic. I think this is the starting point. Let's wrap this episode up. The first part of how to invest in property and what you need to do. In the next one, we're going to go through the key question, the second question, the one that everyone pays every bit of attention to is, where should I buy? Now that I know I can buy something, what do I do with that information? What do I do next? Where should I buy? Where should I park that money? That's what we're going to answer. It happens to be our most popular podcast already on Australian Property Talk, where we deep dive into each state. We're going to now go into the detail as an individual property investor, not a macro person looking around across the country. We're going to go through, if you are sitting there in front of your computer, what do I do next? You know, go on Real Estate Domain. Where should I actually buy? Should I just walk down the road and try and buy the property next to me? Or should I open up my horizons? We're going to deep dive into where should I buy. Join us.